The next generation of Ray-Ban Meta is here. The Wayfarer Gen 2 AI glasses, now at Harvey Norman. Capture life hands-free with an ultra-wide 12-megapixel camera shooting bold photos and 3K video. Enjoy open-ear audio for music, calls and podcasts while staying aware of your surroundings. With Meta AI, get answers, capture content and navigate your day using only your voice. Plus, enjoy up to 8 hours of battery life. Ray-Ban Meta Wayfarer Gen 2, starting at $598 at Harvey Norman. Go!
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 12th of March, 2026, a day where the Australian share market tumbled 1.3% on the ASX 200. We'll have the details with Angus Geddes from Fat Profits later in the podcast, along with why the major banks are now calling for two interest rate rises with the Commonwealth Bank's Trent Saunders. But first, more job cuts in the technology sector. All staff at software giant Atlassian were given 20 minutes notice about an email which was sent earlier this morning, which revealed if they were one of the 1,600 people to lose their jobs globally, that's around 10% of its workforce and 500 jobs here in Australia. Shares in the Sydney headquartered company, which is listed on the technology-based NASDAQ in New York, have cratered this year, plummeting more than 50% in just 10 weeks. Rapid development in AI technology is impacting the industry, reducing the need for some roles like coders. So for more, I spoke with Loftus Peak investment analyst Tom Gilbertson.
So I think the most important thing to think about is the backdrop against how they're cutting jobs. So I think if you've been looking at the software industry over the past 6 months or so, you would have seen that what's basically happened is you have these sort of confluence of factors that have affected software stock prices, and probably the main one is the AI competition risk, right? So you have OpenAI and Anthropic launching these AI tools, and every time they launch an AI tool, you see the sort of corresponding SaaS business fall off a cliff the following trading day. That's probably point number one. The next point is around the vibe coding problem. So effectively, what's happened is Claude Code and Codex have democratized the software writing process, which is undermine the moat that these software as a service business models had. And the last one is sort of around the seat-based concerns. So the idea is if you have more AI doing more work, then you have fewer seats, which is the preferred business model of the software as a service businesses. The probably one of the main takeaways is also the fact that these software as a service business models have a very high legacy cost structure that they effectively need to trim down to be able to compete with these AI competitors, which is probably why you're seeing the cuts we're seeing today across Atlassian.
Is it as simple as to say that AI is taking these jobs?
So I think it's probably too that AI is taking these jobs. I think that what's happened is Atlassian, along with probably every other software company, is looking at that legacy cost structure and thinking, how can we optimize this as much as possible to not be disrupted, but be the disruptor in the AI revolution? So what they're looking to do is obviously launch a bunch of new AI products, roll those out to their customers. And I think you even saw that in the press release put out by Atlassian there. You know, a portion of those jobs or a portion of the staff are going to be retrained in doing enterprise sales and AI. And those are the sorts of industries that we think, at least, are going to be doing well following this sort of AI transition.
Mike Cannon-Brookes did say in the release too that it's not necessarily about AI replacing jobs, but the mix of jobs coming up, right, though. But how realistic is that this new mix of jobs coming from these new types of technology will be enough to replace the jobs that may be potentially lost? Again, not just in Atlassian, but across the industry.
I think that's an interesting question, and I think it's something that the world is trying to grapple with at the moment, especially with respect to AI. I think it's yet to be seen sort of how that mix of jobs goes from sort of our existing paradigm to this new sort of AI first paradigm. But I think, I don't see a world in which, you know, there's this massive unemployment rate and there's this dearth of jobs. I think that what's going to happen is those jobs are going to be recycled into sort of new, and maybe more higher value jobs, and that are augmented with AI as opposed to eroded by AI.
In the meantime, though, we're seeing these headlines. Atlassian, 1,600 jobs. We had WiseTech recently, Block. Do you think we'll continue to see these types of announcements first from more companies? To what extent? And is it going to be limited just in these software as a service sector businesses or somewhere else?
So I think to start off with, AI is very good at coding, which is why we've seen most of the layoffs so far concentrated within that sector. And, you know, the launch of products like Codex, like Claude Code, basically erode a big portion of the coding that would have had to have been previously done by someone sitting at a computer and writing the code. And I think that those jobs will be recycled into something else later on. But I mean, it's effectively democratized the code writing process and made it a lot easier for people to write code, which is why we're seeing the concentration of job cuts in that industry as so far. I think as far as other industries go, I think, as I mentioned before, I think that AI is going to augment the way we all do our jobs. I think there's going to be a mixed shift in the way we all do our jobs and sort of how employment looks. And I think that's yet to be seen.
And so finally, what's the message then for investors? If we take Atlassian, since it's the story of the day, share price have plummeted 50% just so far this year. And what about the rest of the tech sector?
So, yeah, that's an interesting question. I think that what we've seen in the tech sector, especially concentrated within SaaS, is a sort of a derating in that multiple from, you know, a very high multiple. Software previously commanded a very high multiple because they had sticky customers, a subscription-based business model, and limited competition outside of, you know, SaaS. What we're seeing now is a derating of that multiple, and I think that AI is a disruptive force in and of itself. And I think that what's going to happen is these new tools are going to launch a handful of new competitors that are going to compete with the existing software companies. And it's realistic to think that a handful of these software companies will not survive this transition. I think that there's a long tail of software companies, maybe those that don't have deep integrations into enterprise, they don't have large enterprise customers, they're not the system of record for enterprises, may not survive. But our opinion is that the larger, more integral software companies, if they're able to launch AI products and if they're able to transition effectively from their existing SaaS business models and layer additional software, into their customer bases, they will be able to survive.
That is Loftus Peak investment analyst Tom Gilbertson there, and apologies for some of the tech glitches in that audio. Okay, let's go now to a new report from the OECD, which reveals Australia has one of the highest inflation rates in the 38-member country group at 3.8%. Australia's inflation rate is above the average of the OECD of 3.3%. Only Turkey, which has had long-running inflation problems, Colombia, Iceland, and the Slovak Republic are higher. It highlights the domestic challenges Australia's economy is facing, even before the war in the Middle East ramps up, which may add to further inflation. As a result, ANZ today joined its counterparts at Westpac, NAB and the Commonwealth Bank in revising its forecast for the Reserve Bank, calling for two more interest rate increases, one next week and the other in May. So for more, I spoke with Commonwealth Bank economist Trent Saunders.
Well, the Australian economy has held up remarkably well over the past few years, especially relative to some of our global peers. So growth has held up better than most other economies, and the unemployment rate has remained incredibly low. Now, all of that is positive, but it does mean that there hasn't been much spare capacity or slack in the economy. So with GDP growth now starting to pick up, what we've seen is that we're starting to hit up against these capacity constraints, and this has started to flow through to higher inflation. Now, if we look at some of the other major economies that you're referring to, growth generally just hasn't held up quite as well, so they're not facing the same kind of inflationary pressures that we've seen in Australia.
What's interesting, though, is this is all before the war in the Middle East, right? Australia was already having these, I guess not necessarily problems because the economy is growing very strong. That can be a good thing, but as you mentioned, it adds to inflationary issues. But to what extent do you think the war in the Middle East, along with rising oil prices, will now add to those inflationary pressures?
That's the important question. Inflation was already too high for the RBA before the war. And the increase in oil prices that we've seen today, is this going to add to that inflationary pressure? For headline inflation, the increase in oil prices that we've seen today is likely to see headline inflation head north of 4%. And this is just from the direct effect of higher fuel prices. Now, if we add in the potential flow-on effect from higher cost to businesses and higher global prices, global inflation, the overall effect on headline inflation is expected to be quite large.
The Commonwealth Bank is now predicting the RBA will lift interest rates two times from here, one at the next board meeting next week and again in May. I note that the other three major banks are forecasting now the exact same thing. So how much do you think the war in the Middle East has to do with that, or are domestic issues to blame?
So you're right, we have the RBA hiking by 25 basis points at both its March and May meetings. And this would take the cash rate to 4.35%. Now, what's interesting from the RBA's perspective, though, is that they typically focus more on underlying inflation rather than that headline measure that I was talking about before. And the impact of higher oil prices on underlying inflation is actually a lot smaller. So our outlook for the RBA still largely reflects what we're seeing domestically. The economy is hitting up against its speed limit. It's starting to hit up against these capacity constraints. And this is feeding through to higher inflation. With that said, the global environment isn't helping the RBA in any way, shape or form. And the impact of higher oil prices will add a bit more pressure on them to raise rates at their upcoming meetings.
And finally, it seems like a pretty drastic change to where I guess most economists were thinking the economy would go and the direction for interest rates, say, 6-12 months ago. How do you think borrowers will cope?
So it's a very quick turnaround from where we were at the end of last year. If you think back to September last year, the RBA had cut the cash rate three times at that point, and financial markets were expecting there would be two further cuts from there. Instead, what we're facing now is the RBA potentially hiking the cash rate three times over the course of this year. So that's a big change. But if the RBA doesn't address inflation, there's a real risk that this higher inflation will persist, and failing to keep inflation under control would be a bad outcome for businesses, households, and could cause larger issues down the track. So we do expect that there will be a slowdown in household spending. We do expect that there will be a slowdown in the broader economy, but the RBA is trying to keep inflation in check, and that's really what they're focused on.
That's Commonwealth Bank senior economist Trent Saunders there. To the Australian share market now, where the S&P ASX 200 tumbled 1.3%. It means $40 billion was wiped from the value of listed shares, and that the index is now back in negative territory year to date. That's as Middle East uncertainty ramped up, the oil price surging again, Brent crude back above $100 per barrel. Energy was the only sector to finish in positive territory. The prospect of higher interest rates hit tech stocks, zero down 4%, but the banks also lost ground, ANZ losing 2.5%, the miners also declining, BHP off by 2%, the Australian dollar at 71.2 US, euro 61.7 at the close. For more, I spoke with Angus Geddes from Fat Profits. Angus, we've seen some huge moves in the oil price this week, up 30% on Monday, down 16% on Tuesday, down another 5% yesterday, but today up 14%. I mean, these are huge swings and not normal in historical contexts. What does it say about investor sentiment at the moment, and why are we seeing this in the midst of the war in the Middle East?
Look, it's the first time in history the Gulf of Hormuz has effectively been closed. 20% of the global crude oil supply flows through the Gulf every day. So, of course, you know, the longer the Gulf remains closed, you know, the more tankers are being hit by missiles, the longer that those crude exports are interrupted, you know, the longer the question, the bigger the question mark is over just how long the global oil supply is going to be interrupted.
What about the fact that those moves are just so volatile? What does that say about the way investors are thinking?
Well, 20% of the world's oil supply cannot be replaced, overnight. You know, we saw, you know, quite a favorable reaction a few days ago when the United States and a few other countries announced the release of strategic stockpiles. But that, you know, in itself, if this goes on for long enough, is not going to be enough to replace that 20% supply gap that has opened up. And of course, you know, the longer this goes on for, you know, the biggest question mark is going to be, number one, it's going to slow global growth. Higher oil prices are effectively a tax on growth. And secondly, you know, the big question mark is going to be over just how long or just how much inflationary pressure is going to start coming through in the economy. You know, and on that front, we've already seen some pretty adverse reactions in some of the world's bond markets.
It's coming at a time where the Reserve Bank prepares to meet next week. I think we've also got a decision coming from the US Fed very, very soon. Here, the big four banks just recently, overnight, are now predicting a rate rise both next week and again in May. What's the market thinking and what are the implications for investors?
Look, I think the market's certainly factoring in a rate hike for next week. You know, we've seen the Australian dollar push up to 72 cents. So, you know, at least one more rate cut, hike is on the cards. The RBA clearly worried about inflation pushing up towards or above the top of the band. And of course, you know, with what we've seen with oil prices and petrol prices in the last 2 weeks, there's probably going to be more inflationary pressure coming through. So, you know, the RBA will want to be preemptive and certainly put that rate hike through next week.
Can I get your take on the AI trade? Atlassian, the latest one to announce a massive job cuts, 1,600 to go. Its share price, like many other SaaS businesses, slumping down 50% just this year so far. What's your take on the way these companies are having to restructure their legacy cost structures as AI technology develops so rapidly?
Look, you know, fair over ASI disruption, which companies will be displaced has led to that sell-off in AI stocks. I think it's probably a little bit overdone. There's a lot of quality technology companies out there that will actually benefit from AI and be able to actually cut their costs and improve their margins. So, you know, our attitude is very much that there's probably value now emerging in the sector. We've actually seen a lot of the technology stocks do quite well over the last couple of weeks with the markets under pressure. That sort of says to me that, you know, probably we're towards the end of the sell-off. But again, you know, a lot of companies are going to be cutting staff. Some of these technology companies are certainly going to be taking advantage of AI to be able to reduce the size of their workforces.
So with these developments in AI, the war in the Middle East, which wasn't here about 6 months ago, now expectations at least of US interest rate cuts coming later than expected. Has any of that changed the way you invest?
Look, I think we're through the acute phase of the sell-off. Doesn't mean to say that the benchmarks can't go a bit lower. Markets are certainly looking for an off-ramp to this war in the Middle East. And of course, the longer it goes on for, you know, there's probably going to be more risk to the Trump administration and the Republicans in the midterm primaries. But certainly, you know, we're not panicking. I think in the context of everything that's happened in the last couple of weeks, we've only seen the volatility index get to 35. That's a lot lower than the Liberation Day panic. So, you know, I think it'll all blow over, but it doesn't mean to say we might see a bit more downward pressure in coming weeks.
So when your clients look at these headlines, and obviously the media's got a lot to do with that though, what are you telling them? What's your advice to your clients, and are there any opportunities for them in this environment?
Don't panic and get ready to do some buying. I think there's going to be some really good opportunities coming up in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, I think we're near the end of this global sell-off in stocks than the beginning. The other point really is, you know, it's too late to wait for the off ramp to become apparent to everyone, because by then the markets will be up. You kind of have to make your move before then.
That's Angus Geddes there from Fat Profits, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. Give it a rating or review wherever you listen to this podcast from, and we'll chat tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
The next generation of Ray-Ban Meta is here. The Wayfarer Gen 2 AI glasses, now at Harvey Norman. Capture life hands-free with an ultra-wide 12-megapixel camera shooting bold photos and 3K video. Enjoy open-ear audio for music, calls and podcasts while staying aware of your surroundings. With Meta AI, get answers, capture content and navigate your day using only your voice. Plus, enjoy up to 8 hours of battery life. Ray-Ban Meta Wayfarer Gen 2, starting at $598 at Harvey Norman. Go!